Hello, welcome to today's survival show, helping you harness the power of choice to live the life you want when times are tough and also when they are not. This show is about strengthening your resolve. You know, there is a lot of power in choice. When you have the ability to make your own choices and do whatever you want, that's when you start to have a lot of peace of mind, and that's what this show is all about. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. You're listening to Episode 5. Got some good topic matter to discuss. Three main topics. Somebody from our forum asked me if I could do a show and talk a little bit about how to buy a used firearm. You know, we're all under budgets these days, and in my last episode, I talked about how to get prepared on a tight budget. So I thought I would talk about those of you who believe in defending yourself, and I think every good survivor should have the ability to defend themselves. If you're on a tight budget, buying a used firearm can often be a lot more economical and get a lot better deals than buying a new firearm. So I've had a lot of experience with this, and I want to talk to you about it. That's one subject matter. We'll get into food storage a little bit if we can. We're also going to talk about how to acquire a firearm on the internet. Regardless of what people tell you, yes, in fact, it is feasible, and often you can get great deals buying firearms on the internet. And I've got a lot of experience with that too, and I'm going to talk about that. We're also going to have, as usual, our Pinheads and Patriots section. I'm going to talk about some real pinheads out there and a couple people who I would classify as some good patriots. I've got the luxury of recording this show today from my home office in Frisco, Texas. So here we go. Let's dive right into it. A couple of announcements, though, real quick. I want to talk about our forum. Our forum is growing every day. Please become a member of our forum. There's some real good discussion going on there about all types of self-sufficiency and peace-of-mind living skills. So get in that forum. Go to our website at todayssurvival.com and just click the forum page, and you'll see instructions on how to go in there. It's free. Also, two sponsors I want to talk about. Knives and Gear. You'll see a link to their website on today's posting, and also I want to talk a little bit about Personal Senior Monitoring. That's an organization that offers emergency response systems for seniors. Some new sponsors coming up, but I'll probably be announcing those a little bit later on this week. Also, I want to mention there's a new member to the forum. I brought this person up earlier, but my 11-year-old son, I think I talked about him in my last episode, SamDude18 is his username on the forum. If some of you have kids that you want to get them more involved in self-sufficiency and personal responsibility and survival-minded stuff, there's a perfect section in the forum that I created just for kids to get on there and talk about what's going on and how they can become more self-sufficient. It's really good if we can get our young people more involved in this. So let's dive right in. Talking about how to buy a used firearm. Whether you're an experienced gun buyer or not, this first suggestion that I want to give you can really save you a lot of trouble. If possible, take somebody with you when you go shopping for a firearm. And my suggestion is not a relative. The reason I say that is, although your relatives mean well and they love you, the problem is many of them are very biased, and they will try to get you to buy a gun that they like rather than what you like. Okay, nothing against relatives, but you know how they can be. Sometimes they're going to try to influence you to what they want to buy. So find someone like a gunsmith, someone that you know is pretty knowledgeable on firearms, and even if you yourself are pretty knowledgeable on firearms, take someone with you. A second set of eyes can never hurt. Offer to buy them lunch, offer to buy their range fees or take them shooting or something like that on your nickel. It's worth the little bit of money to spend. It's worth doing that to avoid making a huge mistake that maybe a second set of eyes could pick up on. Keep in mind that guns usually hold their value pretty well, especially in today's political climate and the situation we have. So if you buy something, you end up not liking it, it'll pretty much hold its value if you have to resell it. Hopefully that's not the case. I'm going to talk to you about how to find something that you really like. You might want to start with the reputable gun shops in your area. The reason I say start there is most of them have a reputation to keep. Gun store owners want repeat business. They want you to come back and buy ammo. They want you to come back and buy extra magazines and parts. So you know, there's exceptions. All right. I know I'm going to get emails and people are going to say, oh, hey, Bob, guess what? I got ripped off from so-and-so. You know what? If you got ripped off, you know, that happens. We all get ripped off at times, no matter what we buy. But usually reputable gun shops have a reputation to keep up, and they're usually not going to be selling some junk. Now, the prices sometimes might be high, but we'll talk a little bit about that. If you're buying from a private person, ask them to meet you at a shooting range, for example, so you can shoot the gun first. I've purchased a lot of firearms from private people. And you know what? I had somebody take me up on this, and it worked out great. Ask him to meet you at a local shooting range. Tell him that you'd like to shoot it. You'll obviously pay for the ammo. You'll buy their range fee if they want to bring another gun along to practice with. You'd be amazed how many sellers will actually let you do that. If you're buying from a private person, also remember that there's some laws in some states. We'll talk a little bit about that. Here in Texas, it makes it pretty easy. One of the things I like about living in a gun-friendly state is in Texas right now, you can buy from a private person face-to-face, and it's a very, very easy transaction. If I were you, I would keep track of the transaction with a small little invoice or something like that, but you really don't have to in Texas. Know the laws of your state, though. And in fact, speaking of laws, you might want to check out handgunlaw.us, handgunlaw.us, especially when you're buying and selling a handgun. That's a very good resource. I'll put a link in today's show notes as to how to find handgunlaw.us on the internet. My recommendation is once you've got a pretty good idea of what you want to buy, go to a range, find one, shoot it. If you're trying to buy a gun that the range doesn't have to rent, this is why I say when you're buying it from a private person, try to get them to meet you at a range so that you can shoot it first. Some key things to remember. Before you handle any firearm, always, always, always open up the action. Verify that it's unloaded. Can't stress this enough. Make sure it's unloaded. Look inside the chamber. Put your pinky finger inside the chamber. Make sure there's no bullet in there. Make sure the magazine is empty. Remove the magazine. Every time a firearm changes hands, it should be looked at to make sure that it's unloaded. Can't stress safety enough. Never point the muzzle of a gun at anything that you don't wish to destroy. So some things to look at is look at the overall condition of the gun. The first thing that I want you to do is notice the condition of the bluing, if it's a blued gun, or just take a look at the stainless steel. See if there's any kind of surface rust or pitting or anything like that. Look at all the external parts of the gun. The grips, if you're buying a 1911 style gun, take a look at the grips. Are they in good condition? Are the screws tight? Are there any chips in the grips? It doesn't have to be perfect. Remember, you're buying a used gun. It doesn't have to be in perfect shape. But the exterior of the pistol will tell you a lot about how it's been taken care of. If somebody didn't take care of the pistol, and you can tell by looking at the exterior, chances are pretty good the inside of that gun hasn't been taken care of very well. Same thing goes for rifles and shotgun as well. The next thing I want you to do is if you're at a gun shop, okay, ask them to field strip it if it's a handgun. If it's a handgun, ask them to field strip the gun. Field stripping means taking it apart as if you're going to clean it. Not everything taken apart, but just taking it apart simply as if you're going to clean it. So if you're looking at a semi-automatic handgun, for example, all right, have them take the slide off, take the barrel out, the recoil spring, and the magazine out. That's pretty much all you have to do to be able to clean a gun. I've had resistance to this. I have looked at used handguns inside of a gun shop, and I've asked them to field strip it, and they wouldn't do it. Now, I have to be a little bit leery of that, and I would suggest you be a little bit leery of that, too. What are they hiding? Why won't they field strip it? One time, I had a gun clerk didn't know how to field strip it. And you're going to run into those. You'd be amazed how many gun store clerks don't have any training. He didn't know how to field strip it. But I asked him to go ahead and get the manager on staff, who happened to also be the gunsmith, and they field stripped it to let me take a look at it. This is very important, and I'm about to explain to you why. The first thing you want to look at is once you get them to field strip it, look carefully down the length of the barrel. Look at the external of the barrel. Make sure that it's straight. Make sure there's no subtle bulges in it. You'll be able to tell if there's a barrel problem. Just make sure that it's looking straight. That's key. Also look on the inside of the barrel. It's a lot easier to look on the inside of a barrel of a gun when the gun is field stripped. Look to see how dirty it is. Gosh, you'd be amazed how many dirty guns are for sale on the shelves of gun stores. If it's dirty, ask the gunsmith there if he would run some patches through it so you can look at a clean barrel. Ask him to give you a bore light, shine a light in that barrel, look to see if there's any pits in there, look to see if there's something that just doesn't look right on the inside of that barrel. Okay? Also, look at the rear sight. On any gun, look at the rear sight, especially if it has adjustable sights. See if the sights are pushed over to one side. Okay, that just kind of gives you an idea of how well the gun was cared for, whether it was banged around a lot. Generally, it takes a lot to move the rear sights on any kind of a gun. Now, if they're fixed sights, of course, what I'm talking about doesn't matter because hopefully they're not going to move. Okay, if you're buying from a private person, ask to shoot the gun first. And I think I might have covered this before, but if I didn't, just ask them if you can shoot the gun first. Again, you know, you're going to pay for the ammo. You're going to pay for the range fees. I have had people take me up on letting me shoot their gun first before I buy it. So have them meet you at a range and do that. Also, get permission to dry fire the gun. Now, before you do that, while the gun is field stripped, just take a look at the slide real quickly. If it's a semi-automatic, you want to look at the ejection port of the slide. The ejection port is the cutaway in the slide where the spent casings are ejected from the gun. Look at the front of the ejection port. Is there a lot of wear? Is there a lot of excessive wear and a lot of markings there? That'll tell you if maybe the extractor was out of adjustment and if the gun was abused. You also want to take a look at the actual frame of the gun. If you're looking at an aluminum frame gun, for example, let's say you're looking at a lightweight 1911 for concealed carry purposes and it's an aluminum frame gun. A lot of them are made of aluminum. Check to see if you can see any cracks in the frame. You'd be amazed and see when the gun's field stripped, that's when you can tell a little bit easier whether there's some cracks in the frame. If you're buying a Glock or a Springfield XD or Smith & Wesson M&P in a polymer frame gun, this is usually not going to be an issue because those frames flex quite a bit and very seldom crack. But, you know, it can happen, so just kind of inspect the actual frame. Look at the recoil spring and the recoil guide rod. See if there's any kind of breaks in the recoil guide rod or the spring. Check to see if the spring has been cut at all. Some people cut those springs to try to make their guns function a little bit differently. These are all points that you want to check. And again, if you got somebody with you, second set of eyes, they might be able to pick up some things as well. Okay, the next thing is, once you're done looking at the field-stripped gun, ask the clerk to put it back together. Again, have the gun store clerk take it apart and have them put it back together. After they put it back together, get permission to dry fire the gun. This is probably one of the most important things when looking at a used gun. I don't care if it's a rifle or a handgun. Any center fire handgun or rifle, it doesn't hurt them if you dry fire them. I've actually had people try to tell me that it hurts the gun if I dry fire it a couple times. Rim fire guns, yeah, maybe. Not center fire guns, especially the modern day firearms. Dry firing them is not going to hurt them. Now, if you're going to do a lot of dry firing practice to where you're dry firing it a couple hundred times a day or a week, you know, get some snap caps. But I actually had one joker try to tell me when I was looking at a used Glock that dry firing it was going to hurt it. He didn't want me to do it. So needless to say, I didn't buy that gun, even though I knew the gun was in good shape. You know what? Any clerk that's going to tell me that, any gun store person that's going to tell me that, I don't want to do business with them because they just don't know what they're talking about, and it means that they're a dunce. But what you're looking for when you dry fire is a consistent trigger pull. You want to make sure that it's consistent every time. You know, a Glock and a Springfield XD, for example, those triggers are the same each time. So is a 1911. All right. So is an AK. So is an AR-15. Every time you pull the trigger on it, it should feel about the same. You know, you're going to be able to tell whether there's been any kind of trigger work or whether it's not functioning properly. I also want to take a side note here. Be very careful not to buy a gun that's had a whole lot of trigger work done on it, if it's a used gun. I'm not a big fan of that. If it's a handgun that you're going to conceal carry and depend on to defend your life, don't buy one with a modified trigger. That's just another tool for an angry, gun-hating lawyer to hit you with in case you ever have to use that gun and you end up in court. If you own a gun with a highly modified light trigger or something like that, it's just another excuse for them to make you look like the bad guy. I'm a firm 100% believer that the guns that I carry are not going to have modified triggers. All right? You want to modify the trigger on your target gun, your range gun? Fine. Go ahead. I've done it, and it's a lot of fun, but not on the ones that I carry. So anyway, you're looking for a consistent trigger pull. And with revolvers, it's generally not going to affect a revolver either if you dry fire it a couple times. So make sure that that's consistent from shot to shot as well. Next thing you want to look for, and this particularly applies to semi-automatics, and that seems to be what's most popular these days, check, make sure all the controls are working. The first control you want to look at is the slide lock lever. Okay, so let's say it's a semi-automatic. What you want to do is insert an empty magazine. Let me clarify. Insert an empty magazine into the pistol and pull that slide all the way back. With an empty magazine in the pistol, when you pull that slide all the way back, the slide should lock itself open. That's called slide lock. What that does is that simulates the last round of that magazine being fired. And that slide stop lever should engage and keep the slide open. If you have an empty magazine in the gun and you pull that slide back and you let it go and it slides forward again, you could have a problem with the slide lock lever. So that's something to check out. The next thing you want to check is the magazine release button. Press the button to release the magazine. It should come out pretty easily. You shouldn't have to yank that magazine out. Now, some guns have drop-free mags where you just push the button and that mag will come flying out of there. Some of them don't drop out quite so easily. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with the gun. Just make sure that you don't have to just, you know, be yanking on that magazine. If you got to pull it real hard to get it out, then that means there could be a problem. With a 1911 style gun or the Springfield XDs, those types of handguns, if there's a grip safety, make sure the grip safety works. In other words, hold the gun so that you're not depressing the grip safety and try to pull the trigger. The trigger, and you should not be able to move the trigger, and the gun should not fire unless you're applying pressure to that grip safety with the web of your hand. Okay, the next thing you want to look at is make sure that the slide's real tight and doesn't slop around a lot. With a semi-automatic, you know, you're going to have some play in the slide. So, you know, try to move the slide back and forth, left to right a little bit. It should move a little bit. Now, some of the target guns and the match grade guns, their slides are so tight because that's the way that they build them. Those may not move. But in most normal defensive pistols, you're going to have a little bit of play. But shake the gun a little bit. Shake the gun and see if you hear some rattling. And if the rattling you hear is the slide moving back and forth, I would pass on that gun. Because if it's moving that much, you got some problems there. Next thing you want to check is the magazine. The magazine is very important. I'm a firm believer the magazine runs your gun. Always make sure mags are in good condition. What you want to look at for a semi-auto, the first thing you want to check is see if what they're selling are original name brand magazines that came with the gun. You know, if you're buying a Glock, make sure it's got Glock magazines, not aftermarket. If you're buying a 1911, make sure it's the magazines that came with it. Or there are some really good aftermarket magazines for 1911-style pistols, like Chip McCormick and Wilson Combat magazines. If you're getting a couple of those with the gun, that's great. If you're buying a rifle, if you're buying an AR-15, you know, make sure you got the GI mags, the type of mags that are supposed to be used with the rifle. Same with an AK. Just make sure you got some good quality magazines. That's important. You also want to look on the top of the magazine. You want to look at what's called the feed lips. The feed lips are those two little lips on top of the magazine that actually hold the rounds and the bullets in place. Make sure there's no cracks in those. Make sure there's no excessive wear. If you can, stick one or two rounds of ammo in the magazine. Make sure that it's holding the ammo securely in place. You'll also be able to find out if the magazine springs are any good by doing this. So if it's holding it in there nice and tight, if it's holding the bullet in there, means you probably have good springs and there's nothing wrong with the feed lips. Usually it's not a problem with polymer magazines, but with metal magazines, sometimes you could have those damaged. So check that out. Last but not least, look at the floor plate. The little flat piece on the bottom of the magazine that holds the spring in and everything. Make sure there's no cracks in that. Some people that have abused their handguns, they've dropped their magazines on the ground a lot, especially on a concrete floor of a shooting range, and those floor plates can get cracked, and it's no fun. I've had this happen. It's no fun where you got a magazine full of ammo and you jam it into the gun and you try to shoot the gun, and all of a sudden the spring and the follower and all your ammo and stuff come shooting out the bottom of the magazine because the floor plate failed. So you want to check that as well. Most of this stuff applies to looking at used rifles and shotguns. Now, hopefully I've given you some ideas on what to look for when you're buying a used firearm. Now let's talk about buying on the internet. There's some good deals out there to buy any kind of a firearm, long gun or pistol, on the internet. Let me talk about some of the advantages and disadvantages. And for those of you who might be listening to this show that didn't know it was possible to buy a firearm on the internet, I'm here to tell you, oh yeah, it's very possible. And in fact, it's done all the time. Internet sales of firearms is growing. Here's some of the advantages. Some of the advantages of buying on the internet is if you're buying from somebody out of state, you're not paying any sales tax, just like any other item that you buy. If it's going across state lines, you're not paying any sales tax. Now, I've heard that there's some pinhead lawmakers that want to try to change that on internet sales of all types of products. But until that changes, that's one piece of savings. You also have a very large selection of firearms on the internet. Even hard-to-find guns, you can usually find at least one for sale. Now, where do you look? There's a couple of really good auction sites. Gunbroker.com is one of them. I'll put a link in the show notes to Gunbroker.com. There's another one called AuctionArms.com. Those are two auction sites, kind of like eBay, but they're for guns and guns in ammo and equipment. And then there's another one called Guns America. For those of you who are looking for rifles and long guns, Atlantic Firearms is a real good source. I'll put a link in there to Atlantic Firearms. There's a good information website called SurplusRifle.com if you like the military surplus. And there's AIM Surplus. There's all kinds. So just get on Google and search buying firearms on the internet, and you'll find all kinds of good sources. Let's talk about the disadvantages of buying on the internet. Obviously, the disadvantage is you can't physically inspect the firearm. Everything I just told you up until this point, you really can't do. So, if you're on an auction site, make sure that the person selling it has very, very good detailed pictures. Now, let's take a side note here, and let's talk about some of the laws and the process that goes into buying on the internet. You have to use what's called an FFL. Federal law says you have to use an FFL. That stands for Federal Firearms License. So one private person can't just sell a gun to another private person on the internet and ship it to them. Doesn't work that way. What happens is the seller has to ship it to a federal firearms license holder in your state. So, for example, I live in Texas. If I'm buying a firearm from somebody in Ohio, after I've made the purchase, they have to ship it to a federal firearms license holder in Texas. Now, most gun shops are federal firearms license holders. So a gun shop, most of them will do what's called a transfer. They will transfer the gun in for you. They will accept shipment of the firearm, and then they will complete the necessary paperwork to sell it to you, to complete the sale. You're actually buying it from the seller, and you're paying the seller, but it's getting shipped to an FFL, and the FFL is doing all the proper paperwork that are and following the laws that apply to your state. Some of them charge, most of them charge a fee for that, unless you have a really good friend that'll do it for you for nothing. I've seen the fees as low as $10 and as high as $40. I have a good friend of mine here in Texas that transfers guns in for me for 10 bucks. He does it for me as a favor. Typically, $25, $30, $35 is what you're going to pay. So there's one of the disadvantages. You have to pay an FFL transfer fee. Of course, you also have to pay shipping. Now, if you're buying a rifle or shotgun, those can be shipped UPS ground. If you're buying a handgun, law says they have to be sent overnight. So you're probably going to incur $30, $35, maybe $40 worth of overnight shipping charges. So here's the disadvantage. Figure on adding $55 to $60 per gun for transfer fees and shipping fees. All right, so usually you're still getting a better deal if you get a good deal on the price of the gun, but you do have to pay those two fees, and that is somewhat of a disadvantage. Again, there's also a source to find FFL dealers. If you don't know who is a FFL dealer, you can get on the internet, just Google FFL dealers and put in your state, and you'll be able to find them fairly easily. But again, most gun shops, in fact, the friend of mine that I use, he owns a gun store, and like I said, he's a friend of mine. He does it for me pretty low cost. So remember, private citizens, no problem. You don't have to be a dealer to sell or purchase a firearm on the internet. I'm a private citizen. I've purchased and sold a lot of firearms on the internet and parts and everything. This works, and it works very, very well. And again, there's some good deals to be had out there. I want to make sure that you understand a couple more things. If you're buying from on the auction site, for example, ask the seller plenty of questions. Most auction site listings will allow you to email questions about the firearm. Ask tons and tons of questions, and don't be afraid to ask for additional pictures. Many times an internet seller will only have one or two pictures of the gun that they're selling to try to save a little bit of money. Don't be afraid to ask them to email you some more detailed pictures. Any seller worth their salt will do that. I've done that. Normally, if I ever sell anything on the internet, I've got plenty of good detailed pictures on there anyway, because that's just the way I am, and I know people are going to ask for them, so I put them up there. But don't be afraid to ask them for some more pictures. Ask them all kinds of questions that you want. Look at the seller's rating. These auction sites, they're set up a lot like eBay. Every seller has a rating. Check to see what his or her rating is. I have an A+ rating on GunBroker. In other words, I've had no complaints on anything that I've sold. That's very important. Once you're satisfied, go ahead and bid on the gun. Hopefully, if you're the highest bidder, you will be able to get that firearm, and some of them have buy it now on there too, pretty much just like eBay. Also check to see if the seller has a return policy. There's a lot of dealers that are selling firearms on the internet because they can reach a bigger audience, and many of the dealers will have a return policy. In other words, once you go to your FFL to go pick your gun up, you have an inspection period. Usually it's about 3 days. You can inspect that gun, not shoot it, but you can inspect it to see if it meets your standards and return it if you don't think that it's something that that they advertise. Some people are selling them as is, then of course that's what that means. There's no return policy on that. But check to see if that's the case. Pretty much that's it. Go to your FFL, complete the paperwork, and take your gun home, and happy shooting, and be safe. You know, let me just kind of recap that it's very possible and very feasible, and it's done all the time, getting firearms on the internet. It's something that I want you to understand is a big resource out there, but hopefully I've clearly pointed out some of the advantages and the disadvantages of doing that. But, you know, buying a used firearm is something we can all save a lot of money on, so hopefully I've given you some good ideas that you can use, and you can start to search around out there if you're in the market for something and you want to save a little bit of money and you're on a tight budget. By the way, pay cash. Pay cash as much as possible, right? Try to stay away from credit. Pay cash. That's kind of a no-brainer, huh? All right. That pretty much concludes the segment that I wanted to cover on what to look for in buying a used handgun and or any kind of a gun, and how to get firearms purchased on the internet. Now, let's go into our Pinheads and Patriots section of today's Survival Show. The Pinheads. Well, let's talk about some legislation that was recently introduced in the United States Senate. There was some legislation introduced to make it a law that if you were a concealed carry permit holder, that no matter what state you went to, as long as that state allowed concealed carry, your license was valid in that state. So it was about the closest thing to a national concealed carry license that we could get. I think right now we've got about 46 or 47 states that allow concealed carry. There's only two or three that don't. One of them is my home state of Wisconsin. Those pinheads up there in Cheeseland. Come on, people. Let's get with the time. And, of course, our wonderful home state of the president, right? Illinois, they don't allow concealed carry either. Those might be the only two. Maybe Hawaii. I don't know. If somebody, if I'm forgetting some, email me and let me know. Or check out handgunlaw.us. Anyway, this bill was put forth in the Senate to give us the ability that no matter where you go, if they honor concealed carry, you're covered. In other words, I have a Texas license. I would be covered in all the other states. I could conceal carry as long as I'm complying with those states' individual laws. Well, the bill didn't pass. Okay? So we're not going to have that ability just yet. There were 58 votes in favor of it. Now, the way the United States Senate works, of course, they got to have 60 votes to prevent a filibuster for something to pass easily. So the two pinheads that I want to talk about are the two senators that voted against this bill. Senator Voinovich, a Republican from Ohio, and Senator Lugar, another Republican from Indiana. You pinheads. Most of the Republicans are pretty gun-friendly type politicians, and these are two states that are gun-friendly states, Ohio and Indiana. You got to be kidding me, Lugar and Voinovich. What are you thinking? So you guys get the Pinhead of the Day award from today's Survival Show. Now, when politicians do right, I'm going to talk about what they do right. I don't care what party they're from. So let's talk about who voted for this. There's a couple of Democrats that voted for it that I want to make mention. Believe it or not, Senator Harry Reid from Nevada voted in favor of this. So did Russ Feingold from Wisconsin, who doesn't allow concealed carry. That was an interesting vote there. I was shocked by that. But, you know, a couple of typical liberal senators, Harry Reid, Russ Feingold, they voted for the concealed carry issue. So Evan Bayh of Indiana, there's another Democrat that voted in favor of it. So you guys are the patriots. I'm sorry, listeners, if you don't like their politics. Maybe some of you listeners do like these guys' politics. I don't like the three people that I just mentioned. I don't like those senators' politics. But guess what? On this issue, they were right. And I'm going to talk about it when they're right. So they get the Patriots Award. Feingold, Reed, and who was the other one? Evan Bayh, Indiana. Also, Max Baucus, another Democrat, Montana, voted for it. So it failed. Unfortunately, it failed, but hopefully it'll come up again and hopefully it'll pass. So that's the Pinheads and the Patriots section. If you happen to live in Ohio and Indiana, you know what to do concerning those two senators that let that bill fail. Okay, starting to run out of a little bit of time here, so got some good information for you on food storage. That's going to be the next episode. The next episode's pretty much going to be dedicated to food storage, why you should do it, what are the advantages of it, and what to store, how to store, some of my ideas. And again, you know, folks, this show, a lot of it, some of my opinions. I try to bring you a lot of facts on this show, but you're also going to get some of my opinions. And it's okay to disagree with my opinions. In fact, if you disagree, I encourage you to disagree. Back it up with facts. Tell me why you disagree. Put a comment on the blog posting for this podcast. Go to our forum. Put a comment on there. Send me an email. Back it up with some facts. And I may even include your disagreement in on one of the shows, and we'll talk about it. And I'll put the question out there, and we'll get some dialogue going. So, again, thank you for tuning in. And this has been Bob Main with another episode of Today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live the life you want when things get tough, and also when they're not. We help you strengthen your resolve. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.